This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin, and today we look at the tabling and speedy passing of the National Security Council Bill 2015. The speedy passing set off alarms among civil society activists, but are these concerns warranted? I have on the line Ivy Josiah, a member of the National Human Rights Society of Malaysia, HAKAM, and Andrew Koo, co-chair of Human Rights Committee of the Bar Council Malaysia. Now, yesterday in Parliament, HAKAM attempted to hand over a memorandum on the then-proposed bill. It's now been passed. Ivy, before we get into the substance of the memo, could you tell us briefly what happened in Parliament?
Well, let me give you a bit of the context. First of all, we received the bill only on a Wednesday, and within 24 hours, the president of HAKAM, Ambika, led in drafting a two-page document to highlight the concerns. And, you know, the whole lobbying was fraught from the very beginning. We were stopped at the security gate. We were stopped at the Parliament gates. But our aim was to get to Parliament and to reach out to MPs, especially the Barisan National MPs, to either, we wanted them to withdraw the bill, or at the very least, Sharad, to defer the bill so that giving us a bit more time for public consultation, because, mind you, we only had a couple of hours to lobby. And it was very tense and it was very difficult to lobby because we literally had to stand outside the doors on the road and pounce on every MP that passes by. But we did manage to have about, 12 minutes with Dato Sri Shahidan, who tabled the bill in Parliament, you know, the minister from the Prime Minister's Department. But it was, really an exercise in futility because there was really no chance to actually have a good discussion. The lobbying process was really very, very challenging.
Now, Ivy, you know, it's been reported that this bill has been passed at the policy stage. I understand that even if your lobbying and the lobbying of groups like HAKAM couldn't change things, the MPs themselves could have called for a select committee meeting. They could have said that we need to discuss this bill further. Is that true?
That is true. I think there was a ray of hope that perhaps this could go into a select committee process because, you know, mind you, making law in this country, we've had different kinds of strategies, right? I mean, processes where sometimes the government will sit with you, you know, and look at the bill and, you know, and pore over the bill for over a year before it's tabled. Other times it goes into a select committee process too. But this time, within 6 hours, practically within 2 days, a bill was passed. So, no, nobody was listening. Really, it was already decided that, you know, the MPs, when they received the memorandum, they said, yes, they'll read it, but what can you do within, you know, 20 minutes you read it and they were not able to say nay to it. We were hoping that the BNMPs especially could do it.
Now, Andrew, does the new Security Council, the new National Security Council that has been set up, does it usurp the powers of the Agong as the HAKAM memo suggests?
I certainly think it does because under the present regime, as it were, you have the provisions in the Constitution for the Yang Di Tuan Agong to proclaim an emergency in the event of a major event affecting the national security of the country. What you are now creating is a situation perhaps slightly below that where you don't need for the Yang Di Tuan Agong to proclaim a state of emergency, but to have a situation where the national security is being threatened or jeopardized in one way or another, and for the Prime Minister to be able to declare such an area to be a security area. So you're creating a different mechanism, as it were, that's not anticipated, not provided for by the federal constitution, and you're handing that power to the Prime Minister. And I think that's a very dangerous thing.
Now, Ivy, I want to ask you, I understand that the Lahad Datu incursion was the occasion for the genesis of this bill. Do civil society activists like yourself do not see the need for government to have the wherewithal, the power to deal with incursions of this sort?
See, this is what we were trying to persuade Dato Sri Shahidan about, that his argument was that, you know, people have to sleep easy, especially, you know, after the incursion. But we were trying to persuade them to say there are many other existing bills many other security offences and laws that some bills are laws that could protect address security issues, including the Geneva Convention. I don't want to go into details, but we felt that this particular bill was not necessary because there were existing laws to address some of these concerns. And of course, we all are concerned, but we wanted that time. I think more than anything else, we want to have that time, not just a couple of hours, to be able to present our views, present the laws, because Justice Sri Shahidan kept asking, are there any lawyers here and other lawyers? And the irony was he was being flanked by Stephen Theroux, the Bar Council president, who had their own memorandum, sitting beside him was Dr. Ambika, who was, you know, obviously a lawyer too. And there were seven or eight lawyers, and we kept saying, legally speaking, that this law is flawed. And yes, we can produce, you know, arguments as to why we can actually, how we can address security issues. But, you know, they were not going to be listening. It was already decided. So, yes, there are other laws that can address the issue.
Andrew, I want to ask you about the quality of this bill and the language in it. There's some concern about the lack or the loose definitions that are there, including things like security area. While we talk about the genesis, you know, Sabah being the genesis of this bill, but it looks like it could be applied to any part of the country, and for reasons that are not clearly defined. Is that true?
It's absolutely correct. I mean, it's a very broad usage of the concept of security, and it's not defined. So what is a security threat is very much left to the National Security Council to define for itself. And the danger and the fear is that it will be abused such that even a very minor event might still be classified as a threat to national security, thus kicking in the provisions and allowing the National Security Council to declare area to be a security area, and then to have all that suspension of the rule of law, essentially. You're giving carte blanche, you know, a blank check, as it were, to the government to be able to do almost anything within an area that's been defined as a security area.
Do we have laws, Andrew, in this country that basically gives immunity to decision makers from accounting for their decisions and actions? I mean, one of the things it says here, the bill protects members of the National Security Council and its committee from any civil and criminal proceedings. Are there precedents in our laws that suggest that this is not unusual in terms of lawmaking in Malaysia?
That provision in and of itself is not unusual. I mean, there are a whole host of other types of legislation where a public official is given such an immunity if he genuinely exercises his or her authority as a public servant in the conduct of his or her official duties, then yes, there is an immunity from civil and criminal prosecution.
Ivy, last question for you. Where do we go now? The law has been passed. We now have a National Security Council that essentially advises the Prime Minister. Powers are essentially in the hands of the Prime Minister. What can be done? I mean, what are groups like HACAM going to do?
Well, I think we'll just continue to, you know, to raise the public awareness. I mean, we are very used to going into a year where we are, you know, we lobby for the abolishment of the Sedition Act, and now I suppose we will, not I suppose, but we will have to also start looking to see how we can abolish this law. I think it starts with public education, and like I said, it was all within 2 days that we are aware of this particular law. The public is still not aware, so we need to get out there and talk to Malaysians, talk to voters, to say, look, you know, we need to get this rid of this law and to highlight this incredible powers that's going to be in the hands of one person.
Andrew, I want to ask you, can this law be challenged? Can this new Security Council bill be challenged in a court of law?
Well, I mean, certainly any law can be challenged on the ground that it is unconstitutional. And as your first question to me suggested, I mean, this is a scheme, as it were, that is being implemented in Malaysia, which is not provided for in the Constitution. And so the question has to be asked whether the government actually has the power to bring in legislation of this nature, which undermines, as it were, the already set out provisions which we have currently in the Constitution. So I think that would be the basis for any challenge.
I've been speaking to Ivy Josiah, member of the National Human Rights Society of Malaysia, HAKAM, and Andrew Koo, co-chair of the Human Rights Committee of the Bar Council of Malaysia.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.